A lot of chants tonight, but the favorite one I heard was when you told yourselves, "We are awesome." Yeah.
Leave it to John Cena to suck up to the crowd when the show is over, try to get some cheers out of it. It worked, so I guess I can't really fault him for it. And indeed, that crowd was awesome. It was awesome that I was a part of it, too, Monday night in New Jersey at the Izod Center for Monday Night Raw. We're going to get into Raw, WrestleMania, all the events that we did not touch on last week on the Sound Off. Oh, this is the Sound Off, by the way, episode 269. I am the Solo Monster here on SCScoops.com. It is Sunday, April 14th. 2013, and I want to take a few moments here, make a few announcements here at the beginning of the show, this first post-WrestleMania sound-off here this week. A couple of things to get out of the way. First, I want to thank everybody for making episode 268 last week the most downloaded episode of this show ever in more than 5 years. And my thanks again to Noah Mark, Brian Blade, who joined me on the show last week. It's always fun to get together with those two characters and talk some wrestling. We talked about Access, the Roast of the Iron Sheik. Those are the two events that we attended at the beginning of our WrestleMania festivities. We already went through that last week. I'm not going to get into that. Both were fun, especially the Roast. The Sheik Roast was one of the real highlights, I think, of our entire weekend. If you want to find out more about what happened there, MVP was there, Jay Lethal was there, Nikolai Volkov made a cameo appearance to sing the Russian national anthem, all that good stuff. Go back and listen to episode 268, because what we're going to do is pick up with the events that I did not talk about last week, and we're just going to do it in order. There's so much to get to here, I'm just going nuts, so we're just going to start in order, and we'll go through things that way. Also, just be aware that when we were at Access last week, we had a chance to interview, kind of, sort of, a very impromptu meeting with Dr. Michael Sampson, who is the physician for WWE, also the man who saved Jerry Lawler's life. And that ties into my Layfield Report column this week, layfieldreport.com, JBL's website. I have a new column up, which focuses on really the developmental system in WWE, NXT, as it were. This new facility they're building down in the Orlando area, Dr. Sampson shed a little bit of light on that. Apparently it's going to open up sometime this summer. They're going to have 7 rings, so I can only imagine how massive this thing looks. And it really comes off, you read the other reports that are out there that are unconfirmed at this point, but you know, offering classes on not just health and wellness to and nutrition to the various students, I guess you would call them, but courses in wrestling history, almost like Wrestling 101, and it just sounds really cool, and it makes you wonder why they didn't have something like this set up already, but, you know, better late than never. It just seems like WWE is finally putting the proper focus on their developmental system, a focus that just was not there over the last several years, and you need not look any further than some of the talent they've churned out. They have a lot of really talented guys down there. We're starting to see some get brought up. The Shield, obviously, doing very well, but you know, go back and look at the late 2000s into 2009, 2010. Were there really that many big stars that came up from developmental? And go back and compare that to all the big names that came out of, for example, OVW back in the early 2000s when they were churning out people like Brock Lesnar and Batista and Shelton Benjamin and Randy Orton and countless other guys. So I talk a lot about that in the column. Future looks bright. They're doing good things down at NXT right now. Even the stuff with the wellness and making the newer students, the beginners, wear headgear when they take bumps for the first time to prevent concussions. Triple H deserves a lot of credit for what he's doing and what he has done down there, putting a renewed focus on it, trying to create new stars for the future, and hopefully, you know, 5 years from now, there'll be a whole new wealth of talent. They won't have to rely on bringing back Shawn Michaels once a year or having Chris Jericho come in to work great matches and Triple H and Undertaker and guys like that, because those guys aren't going to be around forever. So it's a look at that. Check it out, layfieldreport.com. Let me know what you think. Also want to plug the WrestleMania photo gallery I put up on my Facebook page, facebook.com/thesolomonster. 73 photos from WrestleMania weekend. If you're into that sort of thing, I know a lot of people like the gallery I put up last year after Miami. You can go on Facebook, friend me on there, check it all out. Also, Vintage, Episode 7 of The Sound Off from December 2007. I know I've had people just pestering me, when's the next one going up? Well, it's up now, up on my YouTube channel. So episode 7, if you want to go back in the archives, it's only on YouTube. Go on there, and you can mock me for how I used to sound. I cringe sometimes when I go back and listen to those old sound-offs, which is why I resisted putting them up for so long. But then I said, you know what? It doesn't matter. People want to hear it. We'll put it out there. So check it out. Also, just want to throw a quick plug in for thesolemonster.com, which is my personal website. There's now a live Twitter feed on the website on the sidebar, and again, new logo, new look. In case you missed it, you could log on there and check it out. And also, for those of you who are interested in making a PayPal donation to the show, I would very much appreciate that. You can safely and securely send a PayPal donation. There's a little box on the sidebar. When you scroll down just a little bit, you'll see it right there. Any donation, big or small, everything certainly is very much appreciated. I will send you a personal thank you if you do so. So for those of you who may have missed that, just wanted to point that out as well. What we're going to do here is take things in order. We left off last weekend. I was attending the Ring of Honor Supercard 7. I guess it was Supercard of Honor 7. Is that the title? I don't know. It was ROH, my first live ROH show since 2009. And ROH has changed a lot in recent years. Not quite what it used to be, but still, nonetheless, I must have picked a good night to go, because this was a hell of a show at the Hammerstein Ballroom in New York City. This was a lot of fun, a lot of great matches, a lot of great action, shocking finish. I certainly didn't see it coming. New ROH World Heavyweight Champion crowned. Just going to run through some of the notes I jotted down here on the show in order. They had a video to open the show of Scum. Scum is the latest incarnation of an invading faction, which we seem to have in all three companies now. You know, WWE, it's The Shield. TNA, it's Aces and Eights. And in ROH, it's Scum. And I realized at that point that all three promotions are, in fact, running similar, if not identical, angles with renegade factions at the same time. I assume it's just a coincidence. I had one person email me saying, do you think when all these angles run their course that all three companies will get together and kind of put a moratorium on these sorts of things? And to that I laugh. I don't think these three companies could come together and agree on what they were going to have for lunch. So, no, that's not going to happen. But I just thought that was kind of interesting. Mike Bennett was on the show. Mike Bennett's a name that's been floated around as potentially being WWE bound. I think he may have been. I don't know for sure if he was at the last training session they had. They kind of invited a lot of independent wrestlers to come down, and I don't know if he was part of that. But I know he's been on WWE's radar. Maria Kanellis, who used to be in WWE, is his manager, his real-life girlfriend. I don't know if that means she would come over with him to the company or not, but he's been off ROH TV. Bennett has been for quite a while now, and I take it they slotted him in there after Charlie Haas quit / got fired, which in fact was not an angle, as some people thought it might be. So he filled in against Shelton Benjamin. Shelton Benjamin also may well have wrestled his last ROH match. There's been a lot of rumors about both these guys potentially being WWE bound, but Bennett got the win here. And during the match, he accidentally super-kicked Maria in the face, which caught me off guard. It's one of those things where you don't see violence against women on like WWE television anymore. For example, you will never, I don't think you'll ever, ever again see an angle like they did back in 01 where Triple H and Austin beat down Lita and the Hardys, which was even then, a somewhat uncomfortable angle. So I think whenever I see something like this, it kind of catches me off guard because it's not the sort of thing we see very much anymore. But here it was just treated as another spot in the match, and she was okay afterwards. Jay Lethal and Michael Elgin, to me, had the best wrestling match on this entire show. It was easily the best thing up to that point in the show, and to me it was the best thing aside from the big win at the end with Briscoe and Steen. This was a friggin' awesome match between these two guys, and I believe Elgin got the win. You'll notice in a lot of these cases I didn't even bother jotting down who won. I couldn't even tell you. I'm going based off memory here. But this was great. Carl Anderson, over from New Japan, Tenzai's former tag team partner when Tenzai was Giant Bernard and not dancing around like a fool. Carl Anderson was brought in for the show. He did beat Roderick Strong. Pretty good match. Matt Hardy was part of a three-way for the ROH TV title. And my God, is this man hated. Every chant under the sun Matt Hardy got, you fat bastard. You know, die Matt, die, or die it is another one. People poking fun at how He's not really that fat. Obviously, he's a little heavier than he used to be, but these people hated Matt Hardy. He is a natural heel, and he was actually the first one eliminated in this match. Matt Taven ended up pinning Adam Cole, yet another name, potentially WWE bound. So Matt Taven retains the TV title. I did notice Joe Koff, the COO of Ring of Honor, walking around all night long. I actually felt bad for the poor guy because he was being hounded by a clearly inebriated fan, shall we say, this dude from Canada, who was standing right next to me. And every time Joe Koff would come over and was watching the action, this guy would kind of sidle up next to him and try to start a conversation. And you could tell that Joe Koff would kind of talk to him for a little bit and then would venture off somewhere else. So by the end of the show, I look over and I see Joe Koff. Now, anybody who's been to the Hammerstein Ballroom, if you've even seen any of the old ECW one-night stand pay-per-views, it's a very elaborate-looking space. You've got the balcony seating. So I look over, and there's Joe Koff standing in the balcony, clearly not wanting to be anywhere near this guy on the floor. I just thought that was funny. But yeah, he was walking around, and we had Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly retaining their ROH tag titles over the American Wolves, Eddie Edwards and Davey Richards. Very good match. And then there was the main event, Jay Briscoe beating Kevin Steen to become the new Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Champion. Jay Briscoe still doing tag team matches with his brother Mark, still competing for the ROH tag team titles. I certainly didn't see it coming. It sounds as though this was a long-term plan. They had this planned out for many, many months. They stuck to the plan. Jay Briscoe's been in Ring of Honor forever. And he got a tremendous ovation when he won the match, I think largely because people were caught off guard. They were not expecting a title change here, but nobody was upset that Kevin Steen lost the belt, even though there were a lot of Kevin Steen fans in attendance. This was just a really cool moment to be a part of. I did not expect the championship change here. They had Mark Briscoe come out. They had their family. If I would have known their family were there, I would have thought maybe something was up. They had little kids running around the ring. They celebrated to their old theme music after the match was over, which they can no longer use, obviously, because they're on TV. Just a really, really cool moment. Happy I was there to be part of it. And made me remember how much fun it can be to be at an ROH show. Hopefully it's not another 3 or 4 years before I make it out to one. The next day, we were at the Chikara show. This was my first Chikara show ever. This was part of WrestleCon. We did not really have a chance to walk around WrestleCon itself too much. We were just kind of there for the Chikara show. Place was packed. Wouldn't shock me if it was Chikara's biggest crowd ever. If I had to estimate, and I'm bad at this thing, but I would say anywhere from 900 to 1,000 people. And again, I could be completely off on that, but it was pretty packed. And big pop for the return of Ultra Mantis on this show. I've heard of Ultra Mantis before. Can't say I know too much about him. So didn't even know he was gone. But apparently people were very happy to see him back. There was one thing I want to point out here. Maybe I just don't get it. I mean, I know I've seen Chikara clips before. And I've seen the wrestlers that have kind of put the others in a trance. I forgot their names. The stuff with the ants. I talked about that last week. Chuck Taylor and the grenade. That's I like that. It's fun. But there was supposed to be a match here with Amasis and Ophidian, I guess their names are. Match never actually took place. There was a lot of talking. I just thought this whole segment was just really dumb and really boring. I just wasn't into it at all. They had a match on this show. Marty Jannetty. I had no idea Jannetty was going to be wrestling. Jannetty was out there. He's part of a tag team match that also involved Chuck Taylor, Mr. Grenade himself, Johnny Gargano, and Sugar Dunkerton. And I have no idea who the other guys in the match were, so don't ask me. It was painful watching Jannetty move around in there. You know, his ankles are just so totally fucked. He's posted pictures online of what they look like. It's just disgusting. His ankles, I think he might also be raising money on Kickstarter or Indiegogo or something like that to try to raise money to get his ankles, operated on. I guess since Scott Hall raised almost $110,000 online, that's the new thing to do now. But he did do the Primetime Players Millions of Dollars dance with Sugar Dunkerton, so that was certainly a highlight during the show. I actually put the video of that up on Twitter, at Solomonster, if you want to see it. But just a side note here, I read this after the fact when I had come home. According to Rob Feinstein, Jannetty got caught during the course of WrestleCon stealing merchandise from some of the other vendors, and he was forced to return it. They saw him milling around, I guess grabbing shit and putting it in a bag, and he got busted, and it's just really sad to me to see the state that Jannetty is in. Like I said, cool to see him, but watching him move around and kind of leave the ring, and it's tough because you could tell the guy is in a lot of pain and his ankles are just really screwed up. But anyway, we had a lot of fun at the Chikara show. We couldn't stay for the whole thing. After that match, we left for the Hall of Fame. So apparently I missed Jushin Thunder Liger in the main event, but such is life. That leads us into the WWE Hall of Fame ceremony at Madison Square Garden, easily one of the highlights of the weekend. I love this year's Hall of Fame so much. Way, way, way more than I did last year's show in Miami, which is not to say last year was bad. This year was just a lot more enjoyable. And Mick Foley was out there for over 40 minutes to open the show doing his speech. Very happy to see they didn't, you know, force these guys to kind of wrap up after 5 or 10 minutes. There was no countdown clock in the arena that they had to look at. They were out there. They had as much time as they wanted, and Foley took advantage of that. And Foley easily had the best speech of the entire night. He stole the show, at least until Crazy Bob Backlund came out. But Foley did steal the show. He dropped an elbow on Chris Jericho at one point. CM Punk jumped up onto stage to be the referee. He counted the fall. Just really amazing stuff. Now, I didn't have a chance yet to see the TV special that aired on Tuesday night, so I don't know how much of this they actually showed. But for those of you who are interested, just a little FYI here, WWE is actually going to be putting the entire Hall of Fame ceremony online. I think it may already be online. You can buy it for $7.99. I think it's available through next Friday the 19th, so you can watch it on WWE.com, on their app. I don't know. There's a whole bunch of different methods by which you can watch this thing. So if you don't want to wait for the DVD to come out, honestly, as somebody who was there live, if they're showing the entire thing in its entirety without any editing, and apparently it's 3 hours long, so I'm assuming it's the whole thing, it's worth it. Pay the $7.99, watch the Hall of Fame. It's really good stuff. Just a couple of other random notes here. I tweeted about this. You know, we're watching the show at one point. I think it might have been during Foley's speech. And there was a couple of guys, actually, who came up in front of us, in the row in front of us. I guess they were looking to find their seats, and they realized that there was a man and his handicapped son. I don't know what was wrong with the kid. He had a walker. It was tough for him to walk. Obviously, he had a handicap of some kind. And I'm looking at the guy, and I'm saying, God, you know, this guy looks awfully familiar to me. I just can't place who it is. And then I realized it's the coach, Jonathan Coachman, former WWE personality. Now he's with ESPN. Why he was sitting in our section. I mean, we had good seats, but not great seats. I don't know why he couldn't finagle his way a little bit closer to things down below. But he noticed the two of them in their seats. I guess they must have taken the seats at the wrong end of the row. And a really cool thing, you know, he just said to the guy, listen, don't worry about it. Just you take the seats. They're yours. We're going to go sit on the other side. And I just thought that was a really cool thing for him to do. Didn't have to do that. But I just wanted to point it out, you know, classy move on the part of the coach. So really cool to see him. Stephanie McMahon did the induction for Trish Stratus into the Hall of Fame. And somebody, I think, tweeted me and said, hey, you know, you should do a diva stopwatch for Trish's speech. So I did. And for the benefit of those of you who may be interested, Trish's speech went just under 20 minutes. It was 19 minutes, 54 seconds to be exact. So even on this Hall of Fame ceremony, the divas were not shortchanged. And Trish had a great line. She actually pulled out a pen that Jim Ross had given her when she had her first meeting with him at WWE headquarters in Stamford, Connecticut. It was a WWF pen. Actually, maybe she said that she took it. Maybe he didn't give it to her. Whatever the case may be, it had the WWF logo on it. So she felt compelled to block out the F. She said, I better block out the F so we don't piss off the panda people. And people got a kick out of that line. I guess somebody hasn't smartened Trish up to the fact that that whole thing has been settled. So you can actually say WWF now. Trish also revealed that she is pregnant, and much to the chagrin of all the males in attendance, and that she's expecting her first child in September. And she mentioned her husband, Ron. This is the guy that she's been with for many, many years now. It's kind of like Maria Menounos, who was on the show. And I'm going to get to Maria in a second here. Maria Menounos has been with this guy named Kevin Undergaro, I think his name is. They've been together for like almost 15 years now, I think. But a lot of people don't know about the guy because they're very quiet about it. They don't see him very often. It's kind of the same thing with Trish and this guy, Ron. I don't think very many people realize that she's been with this guy for so long. They may have been high school sweethearts. I don't remember. But I bring this up because she wanted to thank her husband. And so I think they showed Ron up on the screen, and she mentioned her husband, and he got booed. He got massive heel heat in Madison Square Garden. And everybody laughed because, you know, we all thought it was funny. And she tried to mention him again. The crowd was still booing. It got to the point where it became disrespectful. It became uncomfortable now to sit there because by the fourth or fifth time, this poor woman is trying to, you know, she's really pouring her heart out. She really wants to end her Hall of Fame speech with a genuine, heartfelt thank you to her husband, the man that is going to be the father of her child. And these people in the garden are not giving her the chance to speak. They're drowning her out. They're booing. They're booing Ron. So at first it was kind of funny and it was cute. And then it got to the point where I was getting pissed off because it was just completely disrespectful of these people to do that. And it's one of the drawbacks of doing the Hall of Fame in an arena setting. Because for the longest time, whenever WWE had a Hall of Fame banquet, for example, back in the mid-90s, and even the first one they did back in 2004 when they brought it back. Although I do think there were fans in attendance there. But it wasn't in an arena setting. It was in a banquet hall. It was in a hotel somewhere. So you either didn't have fans in the early days, or you had some fans that you welcomed in, but it was a lot easier to filter out the dodo brains who can't behave themselves and kick their ass out. And now, it's a lot harder to do that. Because you've got a building full of 15,000 people. How can you really find all the people, you know, who are being belligerent? You've got 15,000 people who are booing in unison. You're going to kick everybody out? That's one of the drawbacks of doing the Hall of Fame the way they do it now. I enjoyed being there, but that moment, I almost wish that they would not open this up to fans. Because if people can't control themselves, they shouldn't be part of it. You know, it was funny the first time. By the fourth time, shut the fuck up and let the woman speak. Stop being a dick. That's what the fans in the garden were being at that point. They were being a bunch of dicks. So at that point, it wasn't fun anymore. And I felt bad for her because she didn't deserve that. Stevie Ray came out. He did the induction for his brother Booker T. Booker, of course, came. Booker actually had a really good speech. It'd be a shame if they didn't show it on the TV special. He did the spin-a-rooney. He wasn't going to do it, but Stevie Ray came back out at the end and forced him to do it. And he gave the people what they wanted. And that leads us to Maria Menounos. Now, Maria Menounos did the induction for Bob Backlund. Maria Menounos is a huge Bob Backlund mark. She's been a fan of his for years and years, and a friend of his as well. Talked about that last week, the week before maybe. She even got him a small role in a movie that I think her and her husband had financed or produced many years ago. She sometimes will be out at WWE events wearing Bob Backlund t-shirts. The woman is a fanatic. So I had no problem with her doing the induction. And she did her homework. She had this whole speech planned. And yes, it probably went a little longer than it should have. And Foley going as long as he did at the beginning really kind of set things back a little bit. We were already kind of behind the eight ball on time, I think. So even I thought, okay, enough already. Finish up the speech. Get it over with. Let's bring Backlund out here. But again, the fans were getting antsy and they started reacting negatively. They started booing and jeering. This poor woman who couldn't get a word out edgewise because the people really, they wouldn't let her speak. So I didn't get quite as pissed off at this as I did with the Trish thing because I would have thought, you know, it's Trish Stratus up there. Shut the fuck up and let her speak. Maria Menounos, you know, much like Donald Trump, they're not wrestlers. They bring these people in. I almost expect them to get a negative reaction because people resent them being there. But another case where people were being disrespectful. I felt bad for her. She actually put her Hall of Fame speech online a few days after WrestleMania because she really felt like her message was lost. She wanted people to really hear what she had to say about Bob. So you can find her speech online. It was actually really cool of her to do that. But again, you had a lot of dicks inside Madison Square Garden who wouldn't let the woman speak. And I can only imagine, you know, it just reflects so badly on wrestling fans. Every fucking stereotype that's out there about a wrestling fan, you saw on display during this Hall of Fame ceremony, these two times. It was. Why do that? Just shut up and let the woman finish. Bob Backlund came out, and wow, I don't know what to say. You know, at first he was normal kind of reserved Bob, maybe is the right way to put it. Almost boring, quite frankly. And then, I don't know if it's because he realized he was losing the crowd, or if this is what he had planned all along, but all of a sudden he went into crazy psycho Mr. Backlund mode. And people were just lapping it up, they were eating it up. You couldn't tell if it was just a shtick, or if this is really who he is, which is kind of the way it's always been with Backlund. Nobody can ever really tell if it's really his personality, or if he's just acting. I think he's just putting on an act, but it's hard to tell sometimes. So, but the crowd loved this. The crowd was eating it up at that point. And Backlund was going so long with this speech, and he was rambling on so much. He spent more time, I think, putting over this kid that he came with. I don't know what relationship he has to this kid, if he's a family member. I guess he's training to be a wrestler. He was out there begging Vince McMahon and Triple H to look at this guy, give him a job. I don't know that you should spend your Hall of Fame speech putting over some kid in the audience, but Vince McMahon tiptoed out from behind the curtain, behind Backlund, and kind of was tapping his watch and telling Bob, hey, listen, wrap it up. That's how long he was going. He finally gave him the hook. So then Backlund finished. Donald Trump came out, got the reaction that you would expect him to get. He did challenge Vince McMahon to a fight at WrestleMania 30. So a little bit of news there. God, I hope that doesn't happen. He did say that he promised to kick Vince McMahon's ass if the two of them did have a fight. Like I said, I have no interest in seeing that. So Trump kept it brief. He wrapped up. And, of course, Bruno Sammartino was the main event. Really cool to see Bruno out there. He got a hero's welcome. But I got to say, as great as Bruno was, Foley stole the show easily. Mick Foley was really the best part of the whole thing. Just a great ceremony overall, aside from those two incidents that I mentioned with the women. When it was over, they brought all the Hall of Famers back on stage for a final curtain call, and Bob Backlund went insane. He was... Remember the way Backlund used to campaign when he was running for president, and he'd be on Raw, he would be in the crowd campaigning? This is what he was doing here. He was running back and forth. He ran into the crowd. He ran back down. Went to the other side of the arena. Was going into the crowd. At one point, he tripped and fell. And Noah actually was the one who pointed it out to me. And we all kind of went, uh-oh, I hope he's okay. Because you couldn't see. You just saw the body go down. And then like 5 seconds later, he just popped back up. And he was running around like a madman. 60-something years old. That's Bob Backlund. So... when the event was over, outside the garden, we saw a couple people. You know, Cody Rhodes was there with his fiance, Brandy, who used to be a ring announcer for WWE. Dusty Rhodes and his wife were there, Mark Henry, Zack Ryder, and Zack's dad, Mr. Ryder, who I think was more over than Zack was. Vicky Guerrero, Fit Finlay, Gene Okerlund. We saw a whole bunch of people heading to the, I guess, the WrestleMania party bus, is what you would call it. So... all in all, a great night. I think, you know, if they're putting it online for $7.99, pay the $7.99. I think it's worth it. That brings us to WrestleMania 29, MetLife Stadium on Sunday, the big event. The reason we were all there was for WrestleMania. And before WrestleMania, they were still having access sessions next door at the Izod Center. So we actually stopped by there first. And El Generico, much to our surprise, was in action. They had a ring set up. They were doing NXT matches the whole weekend. And so we sat down in the arena and we watched El Generico, with his new name, of course, because he's not allowed to be El Generico anymore. He has no mask. I don't remember who he wrestled. Didn't matter. He was getting a whole ton of ole, ole, ole chants. So it was really cool to see him in a WWE ring. We didn't see him, but apparently Antonio Cesaro was signing at Access only a few hours before WrestleMania, which pretty much confirmed to us at that point that he would not be added to the card at the last minute, and of course he wasn't. Come to think of it, I don't think Cesaro even appeared on Raw. So I don't know what the hell's going on with him. I don't think he's hurt. I haven't heard anything about him pissing anybody off or being in the doghouse. It just really sucks, you know, that a guy like Cesaro was left out the entire weekend. Forget the fact that he's the U.S. champion. That makes it even worse. But he really deserved to be part of this in some way, and he didn't. And like I said, I think that sucks. But a lot of tailgating before the show outside in the parking lot at MetLife Stadium. We got inside, got to our seats. It started to pour, which, of course, is what you worry about with an outdoor show. But thankfully, after about 4 or 5 minutes, the rain disappeared. And it wasn't too cold. Another thing I was worried about. Believe me, as it got later, it got colder, but it could have been a lot worse. So they took a chance. It paid off. I do love the fact that they finally adopted the pre-show idea. I've talked about this before. I talked about this, I think, back to episode 127 of The Sound Off, when I did that whole overview of WWE business and the changes that I would make if I were in charge of the company. People ask me all the time, well, you know, you're so smart, right? You think you're so smart. Well, what would you do if you were in charge? Well, go back and listen to that episode, because that's what that whole show was dedicated to. And I remember during that episode, I talked about the fact that WWE should have pre- and post-game shows before its pay-per-views, even if it was just WrestleMania, although I would like to see it for all the big four. You know, even though Survivor Series really hasn't been a big show for a long time, Rumble, WrestleMania, SummerSlam, Survivor Series at the very least, I don't know why you wouldn't do something like this. So I don't know if this is just a WrestleMania thing or if this is the start of something more. I hope it's the start of something more. They had Jim Ross, Dusty Rhodes, and Kofi Kingston, of all people, hosting this show. But I guess that's fine. You know, you want to get the perspective of a current performer on the roster. They used the same trio for their post-show, which I actually went back and watched on YouTube when I got home. And really cool stuff. I mean, it's a work in progress. You know, they can bring more people in, I think, for analysis and stuff like that. It got a little redundant after a while, but it's a work in progress. I just thought it was a really kick-ass idea. I was happy to see them do it, and I hope they keep doing it. I went 8-2 in my WrestleMania predictions, which I'm very happy with, because I thought it was going to be a bloodbath, and it wasn't. That's including, by the way, the 8-person tag match with Tons of Funk against the Bellas and the Rhodes Scholars, which ended up getting bumped to Monday Night Raw instead. Tons of Funk won. So as far as I'm concerned, it counts towards my average here. The staging, loved the staging. You know, I thought that set is actually among the best ever they've ever had at a WrestleMania show. I actually still like last year's better in Miami. There's just something about the word WrestleMania spelled out across the set the way that it was last year. That one's probably still my favorite. But you could tell they spared no expense with that recreation of the Statue of Liberty, the recreation of the Brooklyn Bridge. Really, really cool stuff. You know, if there's one thing WWE does get right every year, and does in grand fashion, it's the staging, it's the set. Although apparently there were a lot of pissed off people who had obstructed views from where they were sitting inside the stadium because of those giant pillars that hold up the rig, the structure above the ring. I'm not really sure at an outdoor show there's anything you can do about that. I mean, even WrestleMania 9 back in the day had something over the ring. I don't remember if they had pillars or not, but I'd be pissed if I was one of those people who had an obstructed view. Next year, you won't have to worry about that. They'll be indoors in New Orleans at the Superdome. What was my overall impression of WrestleMania here before I get to the results? I came out of WrestleMania thinking I was underwhelmed. I don't know exactly what I was expecting. I don't want to sit here and say that WrestleMania sucked because nobody turned heel and John Cena won. I get that it made sense for John Cena to win, for John Cena to get his win back over The Rock, especially if The Rock is not going to be around. You know, John Cena is the biggest star in the company. He's the biggest star in WWE in the last 10 years, whether you love the guy or you hate the guy. He's the man in that company. And to bring somebody in from the outside and have John Cena lose 2 years in a row, unless you were going to have him snap and turn heel, which would be dumb at this point, didn't make sense. So I get that. But I couldn't help but feel when that show was over, as predictable as that main event was, and predictable is not always a bad thing, but it just felt like very blah is the best way to put it. And for the money we paid for these tickets, and for as big of a show as WrestleMania is, and they promote it as every year, you shouldn't come out of WrestleMania feeling like this show is just okay. Or a lot of people thought the show sucked. I wouldn't go that far and say the show sucked, but my perspective might be different than yours if you watched it at home on pay-per-view. Because being there live, it's always an experience, whether it's, you know, the pyro, the Undertaker's entrance, whatever it is. It's always a cool experience to be there live and to be part of a crowd that big. But I wonder, if I would have watched that show on television, what would I have thought? Because when WrestleMania 27 was over, I thought that show sucked. Aside from the Triple H Undertaker match, which by itself wasn't enough to save the entire show, that was a shitty WrestleMania. I would not call this show a shitty WrestleMania, but I will say that overall, I probably did have more fun in Miami at last year's show. You know, seeing Rock Cena the first time, seeing Undertaker and Triple H in the Hell in a Cell match, Punk and Jericho had a very good match. I probably would give the edge to that show. I just felt like, for some reason, I was left disappointed when this show was over. And that's never a good feeling for WrestleMania. But just to go through the results here, we had Miz winning the Intercontinental title on the pre-show, which was a very quick match. It was like a 3 or 4 minute match. We all know that he lost the belt back to Barrett the next night. I'm not sure what the point of this was other than just to get people excited by doing a title change on the pre-show and try to get some more buys, but it's WrestleMania, for Christ's sake. Do you really... I think by that point, people know if they're ordering this show or not. I don't think Miz winning the Intercontinental title, which is treated like dog shit every single week... The Intercontinental title doesn't have the same weight that it once did. I don't know how many more buys you sold by having Mike Mizanin win this, you know, crappy title, 20 minutes before the pay-per-view, but that's the only reason I could think of why they did this title change. But I did pick Miz to win, so I was happy at that point. Sheamus opened up WrestleMania for the second year in a row, which is kind of interesting. They did the Shield match first, and they gave the Shield a win, which I figured they would do. They had Dean Ambrose pinning Randy Orton. And then Big Show knocking Orton and Sheamus out post-match. So, no heel turn here. I thought for sure that we were going to see somebody turn on somebody, because just for weeks on television leading up to this, you had Randy Orton, even the Big Show, but more so Randy Orton, was just acting so cheesy sometimes, to the point where I said, oh, this guy's got to be just annihilating his partners or killing Sheamus at WrestleMania. And that may well still happen, but didn't happen here. And Big Show just laid him out and walked out, and that was that. We had Ryback losing to Mark Henry. So what a loser Ryback turned out to be. Yet another loss, which I guess means that you lose so many matches, you earn yourself a title shot. I guess that's how things work these days in WWE. He did hit a very impressive shell shock after the match. I didn't know if he could pull it off, but he did. So kudos to him for that. But, you know, why lose again? It just, you know, even after Raw, it makes even less sense now. Unless they're going to do a triple threat match at Extreme Rules with Henry, Ryback, and Cena, which I can't say is a match I'd really like to see. It's not a pay-per-view main event that I'd pay for, personally, but I just, you know, Ryback loses again. I mean, what else is there to say? And the way that he lost, it's not even like Mark Henry beat him clean with his move. Mark Henry fell on Ryback. And when you watch the replay back, at least if it looked like he fell right on his head or something, you could be like, oh, that looked terrible, you know, terrible in like a brutal fashion. This looked awful. He just kind of fell on his body. I guess somehow that sent shockwaves through Ryback's body and he couldn't recover in time. The finish to this match was so goddamn stupid. This was just terrible. Kane and Daniel Bryan retained the tag titles over Big E and Big Z. Or I guess they would be Big E and Little Z? I don't know. Dolph Ziggler and Big E Langston lost this match, as I predicted they would. Although I predicted they would lose because Ziggler would cash in later on, which obviously never happened. But, really cool moment for Daniel Bryan. In fact, this whole week was cool for Daniel Bryan, because last year, Daniel Bryan opened the show and he lost in 18 seconds. Now, as it turned out to be a positive for his career, because the next night, people were chanting, yes, 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 and it just kind of took off from there, but he lost in 18 seconds. He didn't have a chance to really showcase his true abilities at WrestleMania. It was a shitty situation for him, even though it worked out okay in the end. So this year, they let Bryan go in there. I mean, the match really wasn't that much longer. It was about 7 minutes, I think. But Bryan got the pin. He got the big headbutt off the top, got to pin Dolph Ziggler. Crowd was going nuts. Crowd was chanting yes, pointing in the air. And then the next night on Raw, what they did with him and Kane and Undertaker, and there's a great picture floating around of the three of them walking back up the ramp, putting their fist in the air, and you see Daniel Bryan kind of sandwiched in between the Brothers of Destruction like their little buddy or something. That must have been a really cool moment for him, so I'm happy for him. I'm happy for him. He deserves it. We had the Twitter scrolls on the giant screen, so those of you who think only you were subjected to that on television, in fact, all of us at MetLife Stadium could see these Twitter scrolls across the screen every time they would put them up. So the good thing is we couldn't read them, so I try not to pay attention to it. And then we had Fandango and Chris Jericho. What a week for Fandango. get to more of that later on in the Raw review. But I did a column for Layfield Report leading up to this match. It was really a column more about Chris Jericho and his value to WWE. But it was also about Fandango and how this was going to be make or break for him. You know, this was his first match, his in-ring debut at WrestleMania. There could be no better opponent for him than Chris Jericho. And if they had a bad match, it wasn't going to be because of Jericho. I thought they had a decent match. I don't think this was quite the performance that I was looking for from Fandango. I certainly was not blown away by this match. I went back and watched it on TV. It came off a little bit better on TV than it did live, but still, it was rough around the edges. There were some moments and some moves in this match where Fandango, you could tell, he still has a long way to go. But, you know, it was a good enough match. Fandango got the win, as he should have. And I almost wish he didn't, just because I made a bet on the last sound off with Noah Mark, who he coerced me into agreeing to this bet. And the bet was that if Fandango won, and why I even made this bet, I don't know, because I predicted that Fandango was going to win, but the bet was that if my prediction was accurate, I would say Fandango's name the proper way on this show. All Noah wants to do for some reason is hear me say Fandango's name. The man is obsessed with me. But I agreed to do it. I said I would play the music in the background and I would say Fandango's name. So to appease Noah Mark and the four people out there, maybe three, who actually want to hear me do this, I will now say Fandango's name.
Fandango.
There you go. I am a man of my word. Should be very happy. Got me to say Fandango. I will never say it again. So replay it, listen to it as many times as you want, because it's the only time you're ever going to hear it. Moving on here, in our WrestleMania review, we also had a performance by P. Diddy, who did a medley of different songs, some of which were some, you know, this is an easy way to get cheers from people whenever you do the classic hits. He did, you know, Mo Money, Mo Problems. He did, of course, the I'm Coming Home song. He had another one. I forgot which it was. I'll tell you what, I actually enjoyed P. Diddy quite a bit. Didn't think I would, but I enjoyed it. The crowd seemed to enjoy it. He didn't overstay his welcome. He did his three or four songs. He said, I'm out. He bailed. He never showed again. You know what? Works for me. So to all the people bitching that, oh, you know, P. Diddy on this show, find something else to bitch about. You know, sometimes they'll have musical performances and stuff like this, and it takes away from the show or it takes up too much time. They did something one year with Kid Rock and the Divas. I don't know if it was WrestleMania or SummerSlam. It was just totally dumb. This was fine. You know, at least from a live event perspective, I had no problem with this. Jack Swagger and Zeb Coulter actually made their entrance while the video package was playing. So those of you watching on pay-per-view did not see them make an entrance. All you saw was that they drove this, some vehicle, I forgot what it was, down to the ring. They were already in the ring, and Zeb Coulter cut a promo. Now, from what I hear, it was more due to time constraints than anything else, but still, it's WrestleMania. You are in the World Heavyweight Championship match, and you get a jobber entrance. Speaking of Jack Swagger, he was back in court on Tuesday, stemming from his DUI arrest back in February, when he got busted after a SmackDown taping in Biloxi, Mississippi. The Associated Press put out a story. They report that Swagger's case is, in fact, going to trial on June 25th. The prosecutor is pushing for the maximum sentence, which sounds worse than it actually is. It would be 2 days in jail, and he'd have to complete victim impact classes. Not sure what that exactly entails, but it sounds about as fun as a driving course for the DMV. In other words, better him than me. And Swagger also faces fines for marijuana possession, for driving over the speed limit, and driving while impaired. And interestingly enough, according to a report that I noticed on PWInsider.com, WWE's initial plans for WrestleMania actually did call for Jack Swagger to win the championship and have a run, however long it was, with the title. But they changed their tune pretty quick after his DUI bust. So there you go. Swagger does, in fact, get punished for being stupid. So I think that should happen more often. And then maybe others will learn from his example, and something good will actually come out of it. Del Rio retains the championship at WrestleMania. I personally, and many people in the crowd, not happy that Dolph Ziggler did not come out and cash in Money in the Bank. And, you know, we're going to talk about Raw in a second. All's well that ends well. Dolph is the champion. It was a great moment in the Izod Center. I was happy to be part of it. But you know what? I still maintain the fact that Dolph Ziggler should have cashed in at WrestleMania. Nobody has ever cashed in at WrestleMania before. You had 80,000 people as opposed to 15,000 people. Many of those 80,000, not all obviously, but I would venture to say most, wanted to see him come out and wanted to see him cash in. And, you know, true, maybe the reaction wouldn't have been quite the same because you're in an open-air stadium and you have so many more people spread out over the course of the entire stadium. I don't care. I still maintain that Dolph Ziggler should have cashed in at WrestleMania. But you know what? Like I said, all's well that ends well. Looking at what happened the next night, I can't really complain beyond that. But just for the people who say, oh, well, you know, I bet you know you're eating crow today or something like that. I've had a few people email me going, oh, are you happy now he cashed in? Yeah, I'm happy for him. But I still maintain it should have been on the show. People were dying to see it. And I wonder if people's opinion of WrestleMania would have been more favorable had Dolph Ziggler cashed in and become champion on that show as opposed to Raw the next night. You know, something like that could make the difference between people saying it was an okay show or it was a really good show. It's one of those memorable... You know, my fear is that WrestleMania is a big show no matter what, every year. That's the point that it's gotten to. And I almost wonder if WWE feels it could take that for granted and save the bigger moments for other shows. I don't know if they go out of their way not to give people what they want. I would think that that's not the case here. But, yeah, WrestleMania is going to be big every year, but you need moments like that that are memorable. You know, Dolph Ziggler winning the championship at WrestleMania is going to live on forever on, you know, DVDs and video compilation packages that we see every single year. It just becomes a bigger moment if it happens on WrestleMania. So, you know, I don't think that's an excuse not to do shit like this at WrestleMania. WrestleMania has been lacking stuff like that, I think, for a long time. And it could have maybe swayed people in the other direction who didn't think the show was very good. Undertaker and CM Punk, best match on the entire show. I don't know too many people who would have said that going in. Not taking anything away from Undertaker, who's had some great matches before. Or CM Punk, who's awesome. But Undertaker is obviously hurting. He's getting older with each year that passes, not moving around too well. There was some debate as to whether or not he would even be wrestling this year or if he would maybe take a year off. But they went out there and they tore the house down. And I don't know how they keep doing it, but yet again, there is a near fall spot in this match, which was the one where Undertaker got hit in the back of the head with the urn, and CM Punk covered him, crossed his arms like the Undertaker does to other people, stuck his tongue out, and the referee crawled over to make the pin, and everybody stood up, and everybody reacted, and held their breath, as though this was going to be the end of the streak. And I give both men a lot of credit, because that cannot be, at this point, an easy thing to do, to convince people, even just for a split second, that the streak might actually come to an end. And who knows, maybe one day, maybe Undertaker has it in his head that, listen, you know, I'm going to do things the old-fashioned way, when I'm done, I'm going to put somebody over. Maybe he wants to put John Cena over at next year's WrestleMania. If you want a riot, that might be a good way to incite one. I still don't think the streak will ever end, but I don't know anybody who really thought the streak would end this year. So kudos to both men for convincing people for that split second, because that near fall got a hell of a reaction inside MetLife Stadium, and it came across great on TV. I went back and watched the match, and this match was fucking awesome. It was easily the match of the night, and Paul Heyman at one point saved Undertaker's life. Undertaker went for his big dive, and Paul Heyman jumped up on the apron, and so he never did his dive, thank God. Could you imagine? He should not be doing dives at this point in his career. CM Punk got hurt. Unfortunately, there was a table spot where he did an elbow smash onto the Undertaker on the announce desk outside. The table did not break, and upon impact, I think Punk's leg, his right knee, I think, smashed into the side of the table, so Punk is very banged up. I don't think he suffered a major injury as a result. He should be back on television this week. I don't know that he'll be wrestling. He'll certainly be on Raw Monday night, but he got real banged up on that spot. Triple H and Brock Lesnar, No holds barred, Triple H's career on the line. What a dumb stipulation. Again, people wonder why this match got no reaction live. I mean, there's a whole list of reasons why this match died a death in front of the crowd. The biggest reason of all, and Triple H has been through this before. He went through this at WrestleMania 25, in fact, when his match with Randy Orton died a death, because it came right after that awesome Shawn Michaels Undertaker match. And in fact, Triple H and Chris Jericho at WrestleMania 18 died a death because it came right after Rock Hogan in the Sky Dome, and it sucked the life out of the entire crowd. You think Triple H would learn his lesson by now and would have some influence over the placement of matches on this show. But it came right after Undertaker CM Punk, and I think that had a lot to do with it. I think people were still on a high from that match. They were kind of recovering in a way from that match. And so this match suffered as a result. And I've seen other people say, well, it was also cold outside, and I don't buy the cold thing. I mean, yeah, it was chilly. It wasn't freezing. You know, people weren't, you know, frozen in position or anything like that. They were going pretty fucking nuts during the Undertaker-Punk match. I think it was a combination of coming after that. And, you know, also the fact that, quite frankly, I just didn't think this was a good match. I don't know what it is about these two guys. They just don't work well together. I was very underwhelmed by their SummerSlam match. I thought it was boring. I thought the outcome was great. I never expected Triple H to tap out to Lesnar, so that was good. And obviously, I disagree with the finish in this match. I know why they did it. You know, the good guy prevails. Triple H lost the first match. Now he gets his win back. He gets his revenge for having his arm broken twice. I get that. I still say it was the wrong outcome. But this match was just not good. And I have not yet watched the entire match back. I've kind of skimmed through it, the TV version. So maybe if I sit down for 24 minutes and watch the whole thing from start to finish, my opinion will change. But based on what I saw, not really. And for those wondering, was the crowd as dead live as it came across on TV? Yeah, it was. People did not care about this match, at least for the first half. You know, maybe it picked up a little bit towards the end. You know, people liked it when Shawn super kicked Paul Heyman in the face. I went into the show thinking this was going to be the show-stealing match. I had a lot of hope. This was going to be the match of the night. They had all the smoke and mirrors, the no-holds-barred stipulation. They'd probably have weapons and stuff, and, you know, Shawn would obviously get involved. Who knows? Maybe Stephanie would get involved. And some of that happened, but for whatever reason, they brought it all together, and it just didn't work. Brock apparently got knocked out legit about 90 seconds into the match, and he was pretty loopy for the next several minutes, and Triple H had to guide him. He forgot a lot of his spots. That's certainly not a good thing. It certainly probably has concussion written all over it. By the way, Brock came out. He was jacked. I've never seen Brock Lesnar this big since his heyday in 2002 in WWE when he first came in, and he was humongous. This guy was jacked to the gills. So, again, I said this to somebody. I think I did another podcast, and I said this to somebody. Those people who are wondering if the part-timers are subject to the same sort of wellness testing that everybody else is, this is a glaring example, I think, of your answer here. The answer is no. Until I hear otherwise, I am not convinced that these guys are subject, like him and Rock, for example. Rock also looking as big as ever and tearing shit off the bone. And I think we all know what's going on here. But Brock was just a beast on this show. But this match, it just didn't work. Maybe it did to some people, but didn't work for me, and the finish just clinched it. I did not need to see Triple H win this match. Where does Triple H go from here? What next big feud now does Triple H move on to? Answer me that. Poor night for Team Heyman. Both of Paul's men losing at WrestleMania. It's sad. Damian Sandow got bumped off the WrestleMania card, which seemed to put Cody Rhodes in a foul mood. His girlfriend went on Twitter the next day and basically said, Cody Rhodes, until further notice, is going to be off Twitter, and therefore I will be off Twitter with him. So that certainly doesn't sound good. John Cena and The Rock in the main event. I was very surprised. You know, last year we had the big pomp and circumstance. We had John Cena coming out. Machine Gun Kelly sung him out to the ring. And then, of course, Flo Rida did a couple of songs before Rock came out. And John Cena's had a lot of very elaborate WrestleMania entrances over the years. You know, he's had one where he drove a car through, you know, glass. He had the one with the gangsters when CM Punk dressed up as a gangster from the 40s. Remember that one? And the one with all the whole John Cena army, an army of John Cena lookalikes, which is just the stuff of nightmares. So they've had a lot of very elaborate entrances, and they went the more conservative route this year. Now, earlier in the show, they showed a John Cena promo package. Later on, they showed a Rock promo package. So I wasn't expecting promo packages, but they just did nothing. They literally, it was so abrupt, one segment ended, and almost immediately, John Cena's music hit. There he is. So I'm not really complaining too much about that. I'm not saying we need the whole song and dance every year. It just seemed... It seemed very odd to me, almost like maybe it was a time issue. Maybe they had something planned and they had to cut the whole thing. I don't know. But Cena came right out, then Rock came right out, and we were off to the races at that point. So twice in a lifetime, John Cena and The Rock. So we all know what happened. John Cena becomes 11-time WWE champion. The Rock doing for John Cena at WrestleMania 29 what Hollywood Hogan did for him at WrestleMania 18, right down to that exact scene on the stage at the end. Hogan, back in the day, holding up Rock's hand. Rock very humbly looks down at the ground. Hogan taps him on the stomach, walks away. We had almost an identical scene this year. Rock walking up to the stage, meeting John Cena. They salute one another. Rock holds up Cena's arm, points to him. The fireworks go off. He pats Cena on the stomach, walks away. You know, again, I get why they did it. This was their way of putting John Cena over. It's funny to me. It was funny to me when Hogan did that for The Rock, and it's funny to me now when Rock did that for Cena. Because these are already made men. These are the biggest stars of their generation. And it was funny to me back then because the whole way that match was portrayed with Rock and Hogan was the star of the past against the star of the future. And it was funny to me because Rock was already in the process at that point of making movies. In fact, I think after that WrestleMania, I don't remember if Rock left right away or what the case was, but I know Rock was filming movies at that point. He was already not really wrestling full-time anymore, kind of. And so here, you know, John Cena's been the guy for 10 years now. Does John Cena really need to be put over in this way? It's just, I don't know, it's just funny to me. I could tell you from being there live, 95% of the people in MetLife Stadium did not want to see this finish. So if WWE wanted to have a WrestleMania finish with their conquering babyface hero going over and having 80,000 people jeering and booing, then they got what they wanted. And why they would have expected any other outcome, I don't know. But I mean, you would think the biggest heel in the company had just won the championship at WrestleMania. It's funny, you know, for all the people saying that John Cena should turn heel, they're missing out. He's already a heel. Somebody just forgot to tell these people. He is what you want him to be. And on this night, to this crowd, he was a heel. People did not want to see this finish. And I did not want to see this finish. It just felt, that's it? Even the finish of the match. It got to the point there where every other move, attitude adjustment, rock bottom, attitude adjustment, rock bottom, another attitude adjustment attempt, another rock bottom attempt. It's like, goddamn, could you guys please learn some new fucking moves? I'm begging you. One new move per person. That's all I ask for. They just kept going for the same shit over and over. And I mean, they took that spot and they killed it. They absolutely strangled it to death. Yeah, it's one thing to slip out of a guy's move once or twice, but I lost track. I couldn't even count on both hands how many times they both attempted their fucking moves. So just very unoriginal. You had an entire year to come up with a creative finish to this match, and that's the best you can come up with? These guys knew exactly what the main event was going to be a year ago. You would think in the course of a year they could come up with something better than that. But whatever. I mean, the match was good. It wasn't great. I liked last year's match better, but that's just me, maybe. You know, it is what it is. It was the WrestleMania main event. It left a poor taste in people's mouths. And it shouldn't have been a shock. I also didn't notice a single backstage segment on the entire show inside the stadium. I asked you guys on Twitter. You guys said that nothing aired on TV either. There was no America the Beautiful. Apparently that got cut due to time, which is weird to me because America the Beautiful is the first thing that you do at the beginning of the show. How could that be cut for time? I don't know that I really buy into that. So between that and the lack of like elaborate entrances for the main event that they always do, it just, I don't know. This show was very weird to me. Just a very weird WrestleMania show this year. Speaking of weird shows, that's the perfect segue into Monday Night Raw from the Izod Center, East Rutherford, New Jersey. This past Monday night, I had the great privilege of being in attendance live. This was the second year in a row that I was in attendance at the post-WrestleMania Raw. And I was not going to make the mistake of not being there this year after last year's show. And those of you who listen to the sound of, you know that I, that April 2nd show last year, which was the post-WrestleMania Raw, was the best Raw show of the entire year. Not even because of any matches on the show. Just because of the atmosphere, because of the fans. That was the night they made Daniel Bryan. They put Daniel Bryan on the map that night. Brock Lesnar made his big return to the company. 8 years gone. Place went nuts. People knew he was in town. There were a lot of Brock Lesnar signs out there, but they didn't care. When his music hit, the place exploded. And I didn't think I'd ever be part of something like that again. Well, I was wrong. That's the only thing I can say about that. This was an amazingly fun show. And apparently it was fun for you guys watching on TV. Imagine what it was like for those of us in the building who were part of it. I wouldn't give that experience up for anything. And I got to tell you something. I don't know if it was because people were left underwhelmed by WrestleMania the night before, because a lot of these people at Raw were at WrestleMania. Not all, but many of them were. And many of them were international fans who were still in town from the UK, from Ireland, from places all over the world. That's part of the reason you get such a lively, boisterous, active crowd at these post-WrestleMania shows. But people have asked me, which was better? Last year in Miami or this show in Jersey? And I can honestly say this show in Jersey blew that one out of the water. And that was a great show. And the post-show stuff, when Daniel Bryan came out for a dark match, because he didn't even wrestle on Raw, he came out for a dark match, like a 10-man tag dark match. And I still have video of just everybody in unison in the crowd pointing in the air, chanting, yes, 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 letting Daniel Bryan be the last one on the mic that night. And it was people in the hallways, people honking their horns to the yes chant. This was an eerily similar show in that the star of this show was Fandango. Now, why? I have no idea. I don't think it's because people think he's a great wrestler. I don't think it's because people like the gimmick. I don't think people necessarily think he's all that great. I just think they latched on to this guy. They started humming his music. They were having fun with it. They ran with it. And it's become this phenomenon now. It's like Fandango Mania running wild. They're playing his music on SportsCenter. They're playing his music on the MLB Network. They have, you know, team cheerleaders for, I think, the Houston Texans singing Fandango's music. Singing his music, by the way. An instrumental theme with no words. And people are going around, pointing in the air, singing his song. I've never seen a crowd have so much fun on Monday night. I've never been part of a crowd where I've had that much fun at a wrestling event in my entire life. It was the most fun I have ever had at a wrestling event in my life. And that includes two WrestleManias. Now, for the money we paid for our WrestleMania ticket as compared to our Raw ticket, there's something wrong with that. When we walk out of that building thinking we had more fun at this show, this was a much better show than WrestleMania, there's something wrong with that picture. And, you know, it was like an hour into the show, and Brian Blade turned to me and said, this is already a better show than WrestleMania. And I was hard-pressed to disagree with him on that. So, I don't know. They better work on that. Either lower the WrestleMania ticket prices and jack up the Raw ticket prices, or just figure out how to make WrestleMania as enjoyable as Raw. Because there's something wrong with this when the post-WrestleMania show is more looked forward to. People are looking more forward to, I think, that post-New Orleans WrestleMania Raw next year than they are WrestleMania 30 itself. So it was an unbelievable experience to be there live. Much better, in my opinion, much more fun than Miami. Easily the Raw of the year. It's going to be tough to top this show. You may as well just close the balloting now, because there will not be a better Raw show from top to bottom than the one we saw on Monday night. And there are rumors, and I don't know that this is confirmed, obviously, but there are rumors of next year's post-Mania Raw show also being held inside the Superdome, which is the site of WrestleMania 30. I don't know that I like that idea very much. If that is the case, if there is teeth to this story, I think it's a huge mistake. I think part of the reason these shows are so much more enjoyable, and part of the reason these shows are so much louder, it comes across louder, is because it is in a smaller, more intimate venue. You're in a 15,000-seat or 20,000-seat arena, not a 70,000 or 80,000-seat stadium. And I don't know how many people, I don't know what the capacity is for the Superdome. Obviously, the difference is it's indoors and not outdoors, which is good, because you'll keep the sound in. I don't know if the capacity is 50,000, 70,000, whatever it is. You're going to have a lot more people packing that building for WrestleMania, and you'll have a half-empty building for Raw the next night. So you're going to ruin the whole experience. Part of the whole fun is getting the 15,000 other people that are there in close quarters with you to join in these chants and to be loud and have fun. I feel you lose a lot of that if you try to do that in a big dome. So hopefully they go in a different direction. But that seems to be the rumor at this point. There was high drama before the show started involving The Rock. The Rock was supposed to be on Raw. He was advertised for the show. The plan apparently was for him to kick off his WrestleMania 30 program with Brock Lesnar by having Paul Heyman and Brock Lesnar come out during an opening show promo between Rock and Cena for them to attack Rock, probably Brock laying him out with an F5 would be my guess, and that would be the first shot fired on the road to Rock versus Lesnar at WrestleMania 30. Now, I don't even know if that's still the plan for WrestleMania next year. I would imagine it is, but you wonder, because what happened is The Rock apparently got hurt. He got hurt pretty bad at WrestleMania during his match. The list of injuries to Rock, he suffered a torn abdominal muscle, a torn abductor, which I believe is in the hip, and a hernia on top of that. And hernias are no fun. So, you know, I hear the story and I hear The Rock tears a muscle. And, you know, hey, color me shocked. Yes, he is older now, but I don't recall Rock ever tearing things the way that he has since he came back last year. Remember last year in the match with Cena? He tore, was it his hamstring, I think, that he tore? Now he tears multiple muscles on apparently an attitude adjustment. It wasn't even like Cena fucked up, he landed wrong because it was his fault. He took an attitude adjustment earlier in the match. I think that's where the initial tear took place in the abdomen. And as the match continued, the injury just got worse and worse until it just pulled right off the pelvis, which sounds delightful. This guy is jacked to the gills. It was bound to happen. You don't hear about people tearing muscles left and right unless they're on something. That's all I'm going to say. So, Rock is hurt. He is not having surgery. He just posted a tweet, actually, yesterday, I believe, saying that he met with his doctor and they have elected not to reattach the tendons to his pelvis. It'll scar up on its own. He's moving ahead, filming Hercules. He does not want to hold up production of his new movie. He is going to soldier on. And what this means for Rock's wrestling future, I don't know. Because The Rock is now 41 years old. Now he's suffering injuries left. And this is a pretty serious injury, too. Is he going to want to get back in the ring? If you think about it, what happened at WrestleMania 29 would be a nice bow on The Rock's career. He came back. He beat John Cena at WrestleMania 28 in his hometown of Miami. He won the WWE Championship, had a couple of title defenses against CM Punk, so we got to work with him. And in the end, at WrestleMania the very next year, he returned the favor to John Cena, put him over, celebrated at the end, did the whole thing, pointed at him, you know, passed the torch, call it what you want. In a way, it's kind of a good storybook ending for Rock's career. On the way out, he put the top star over. He proved that he could come back and have good matches. He won the championship one final time. I don't know that Rock needs to come back. I mean, I would like to see him. I think Rock and Brock would be an interesting match for WrestleMania next year. But I don't know that he has to. And I don't know that he's going to want to. So that'll be an interesting story to follow as well. WWE was hoping he would wrestle more matches. And now, I don't know that that's going to happen. Another big thing that happened, and it's amazing to me that this has been overshadowed by the Fandango stuff. It's almost criminal, in a way, that it's been overshadowed by the Fandango stuff. But I had the privilege of being at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn in December when Dolph Ziggler beat John Cena in the main event to retain his Money in the Bank briefcase. I have been part of very few pops like the one that I experienced when Dolph unhooked that briefcase in that ladder match and the place came unglued. And not only was I there for that, but I also can now say that I was there to see Dolph Ziggler cash in his Money in the Bank briefcase successfully and become the world heavyweight champion, technically for the second time, but I know Dolph would rather forget about that first 5-minute title reign. So we'll pretend that didn't happen. Very cool that I could be there for both of those events. And talk about a face pop. When Ziggler's music hit, first of all, I think everybody was just waiting for it. It was the perfect opportunity. Del Rio is hurt. He's in the ring. He's being worked on. He's dispatched of Jack Swagger. And Dolph Ziggler's music hits. I put the video up on my Facebook page, if you want to see it, to give you the full live experience of what it was like to be in the building when his music hit and everybody realized what was about to happen. The place vibrated. It exploded. I've never been part of a reaction like that in my life. It was a stone-cold pop from the late 90s. And Ziggler comes down, cashes in, has a little, like, 2-minute match with Del Rio. They did a quick near fall. There was a near fall on Dolph where I think everybody kind of held their breath. And in the end, Dolph hits the zigzag, gets the pin, and, I mean, you would think, again, that he was the biggest babyface in the company. People counting along with the 3 count. The place explodes when he wins the championship. They're so happy to see this man realize his dream, realize his potential, and win the World Heavyweight title. AJ is in tears. Big E has a big smile on his face. Dolph is going nuts. It was one of the best moments I've ever been part of at a wrestling show. So much fun. So loud. You could barely hear Justin Roberts announce Dolph as the new champion. Just tremendous stuff. And again, overshadowed by the Fandango stuff. But to me, that was the best part. That was really the best moment. I mean, when that music hit and he first walked out, I've never been part of a reaction from a crowd like that in my life. So I want to thank Dennis from the website reds.de. That's WREDS.DE. Apparently Germany's top wrestling podcast, aside from this one. I want to thank him for the interview at the Izod Center. It was very nice to meet Dennis, as well as Andrew, and a few other listeners that I was able to meet over the course of the weekend. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that. Very nice meeting all of you. And if you want to hear that little mini podcast I did with Dennis, it's up on Twitter somewhere, on my Twitter, so you can find it on there. Just go through a couple of raw notes here that I jotted down from the live event experience. I did have a little girl screaming for John Cena sitting behind me the entire night. And so I now only have about 30% hearing in my right ear as a result. Those of you, again, wondering why John Cena does not turn heel, this little girl is Exhibit A of why he will likely never turn heel. Just ridiculous. This girl, the decibels that she could reach with her shrieks for John Cena, it was just maddening to me the entire show. Miz, I mentioned earlier, lost the Intercontinental Championship back to Wade Barrett on the show. When Miz and Barrett had their match, really when Miz came out, I thought that was a good time to hit the concession stand. And you may recall an experience I shared with all of you once before on this show when I was at, ironically, the Izod Center. An absolutely horrible concession stand experience. I think I was in line for about 4 days. So I was hoping that it would go a little bit better this time, and it only went slightly better. I don't know what takes so goddamn long, but suffice to say, I missed the entire Intercontinental title match, but I did hear Wade Barrett announced as the new champion, and when he was announced as the new champion, cheers erupted in the concession stand lines. There were even a few people high-fiving each other. So that tells you all you need to know about what people think of The Miz. We had the Sheamus-Randy Orton match. This may go down as the most infamous match, perhaps, in Raw history. Certainly one of the most infamous. I said before that this was probably, well, not probably, this was the most fun I've ever had at a wrestling show before. This was the most fun I've ever had during a wrestling match. And I couldn't even tell you what happened in the match itself, because nobody was paying attention to what was going on in the ring. Absolutely nobody. Instead, what happened is, people, just for whatever reason, didn't want to see Randy Orton against Sheamus. They did an interactive poll to see who would face the Big Show. And Randy Orton blew Sheamus out of the water in this poll. And I don't know what that says about Sheamus, who's the guy they're building around as like the number two babyface in the company. Which, again, goes to why John Cena absolutely cannot turn heel. There is no backup babyface to put in his place if they turn John Cena heel. Orton and Sheamus, they aren't going to cut it. So Orton beat Sheamus like 77%, I think, to 23% in this poll. And yet, the fans still get screwed because instead of giving us the match we wanted, giving us the match we voted for, they say, no, you know what we're going to do? We're going to put Randy Orton against Sheamus instead. So it was a nice fuck you to the fans, and I like to think that the fans said fuck you back. And this was their response. I kind of jotted down after the event was over all of the different chants. It's impossible for me to read back all of them. There were so many. But this is a sample of most of the chants that you heard during the match that were started by many of us in the crowd. There was an ole 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 chant, which I know there were a lot of international fans. I guess that's a soccer chant. Every time I hear that, I can't help but think of El Generico, although I doubt it was an El Generico chant. But they were chanting ole. They chanted for RVD, who was at the Hall of Fame and could very well end up back in WWE. His TNA contract has expired. They chanted for Mike Chioda. Twice, in fact, they chanted for referee Mike Chioda. They chanted loudly for JBL. They chanted Jerry for the King. They chanted Michael Cole at one point, which was just completely bizarre. Justin Roberts got a chant. One of my favorite chants was for the Ice Cream Man. They chanted Ice Cream Man. And I couldn't tell. There was a whole big commotion going on. I couldn't tell where the hell this was coming from. And I look over to my right, and in the section right next to us is an ice cream guy in the aisle, with ice cream in each hand. People are cheering for him, they're pointing at him, and this guy is just soaking up all of the adulation. He runs with it, he goes with it, he's pointing this way, he's pointing that way, he's got his arms up in the air. This guy's having a blast. It was great. They chanted cotton candy at the cotton candy guy, they chanted pretzel at the pretzel man, they chanted we are awesome multiple times, so not a very modest crowd in New Jersey. You heard the We Are Awesome chant again after the show at the beginning of this podcast. They chanted, that side sucks. Basically, the right from where we were sitting, we were dead, not quite dead center, but we basically had a dead center view of the Titantron. That was the side that we were on. To our right, that right side of the arena was the most boisterous. The left side of the arena, not so much. So the right side would often point at the left side and say, that side sucks, which I thought was great. They chanted, we want X-Pac. Again, I couldn't tell why they were chanting it. I looked to my right, and up in one of the luxury boxes next to our section is Sean Waltman. His injured butthole and all. I'm surprised people didn't ask, they didn't start a, you know, how's your butthole chant. But they chanted for X-Pac, and X-Pac at one point, you know, they opened the window to the luxury box. I figured he might not want to draw attention to himself, but nope. He was posing, he was waving at the crowd. They chanted boring later in the match. End this match. And then finally, when the Big Show's music hit, the place exploded. Big Show walked out. He laid out Sheamus. He laid out Randy Orton. The crowd chanted, thank you, Big Show, after he interfered. They were so happy that he ended this match. And I got to be honest with you, I was kind of sad when the match was over. I didn't want it to end. I wanted to see how many more chants we could get going. The best part about this whole thing, though, was that we actually did start something, and I can't say we. I give the credit to Noah. Noah Mark got a wave going, which at one point you could see. I watched it back on TV. You could see in the background the people doing the wave, and the announcers made reference to it. Noah is the one who got that wave started. As he said, he often starts that at Florida Marlins games or Miami Marlins, whatever the hell they call themselves these days. And really, why wouldn't you try to start a wave at a Marlins game? Because there's not much to cheer for. Of course, at a Marlins game, you probably don't have that many people in the stands, so you probably can't get much of a wave going. But Noah stood up. He got people in our section really riled up and motivated. And it took a couple of tries, but he got it going. And sure enough, there it goes all around the arena. Lots of credit to Noah Mark on that one. If you saw the wave on TV, he's the guy who started it. We just had so much fun during this match. It wasn't even about the match in the ring, and I saw some people online say, oh, it was so disrespectful. I think maybe Lance Storm even, somebody on Twitter said, oh, that was disrespectful. You know what? Fuck that. We were having a fucking blast. You know, it wasn't disrespectful. It wasn't the match we wanted to see. You gave us the chance to vote for the match that we wanted to see, and you gave us a different match anyway, in spite of the results. Fuck you! We're going to do whatever the hell we want to do. And we all had fun. It was so much fun being part of that crowd during that match. Sheamus seemed to take it in stride. He went on Twitter. He posted some sarcastic remarks about it. He said he was happy. He was proud to be there. Randy Orton did not look happy at all, although he has gone on Twitter since and said he was, you know, it's so cool that I was there and I was a part of it. I wonder if he really feels that way. He seemed to be pretty pissed off about the whole thing. And I'm not saying he doesn't have a right to be. These guys are in there. They're working hard. But you know what? We paid money. And maybe people felt like they didn't have as much fun at WrestleMania, and they were bound and determined to have fun tonight, and they did. They certainly did. The Fandango stuff came later on. People just started humming Fandango's theme, which was amazing. They were pointing their index finger pointing up in the air as they sang the song. They were singing it during the commercial break, in the dark. They wouldn't stop singing it. And you heard the audio that I included from my phone earlier on, John Cena cutting a promo after the show, trying to win over the fans, which did kind of work. And instead of playing music, he said, "I'm going to let you guys sing as I leave." And people started singing Fandango's theme, and John Cena did a little ballroom dancing up the aisleway to the back. People, as they left the arena, were still singing the song. They were singing it in the parking lot. They were singing it, apparently, on the trains and the buses going back into New York City. I can tell you that we had a post-WrestleMania gathering at a bar in New York, in the city after the match. Whole bunch of people getting together in the bar. Somehow they got the bar to play Fandango's theme music, and everybody in the bar, they took over the bar, and everyone's dancing to Fandango's theme. I refuse to reveal whether or not I partook in those activities, but suffice to say we were all having a great deal of fun. Drinking and singing Fandango's theme in the bar after the show. Just a completely surreal experience. You know, as far as Fandango is concerned, I haven't turned a corner on him. I see everybody jumping on the Fandango bandwagon. People probably think I'm going to jump on the Fandango bandwagon. I'm not going to jump on the Fandango bandwagon because he didn't really show me anything that I wasn't expecting at WrestleMania. I expected more out of him, if anything, and I was a little bit underwhelmed, quite frankly, by his match with Jericho. It was still good, but it should have been better. And on Raw, he just had a very brief match with Kofi Kingston. Jericho came out and laid him out. He did a funny thing afterwards where he was hurt, but he, you know, got on the microphone and told Justin Roberts, "You said my name wrong, and this is how you say it." And people were eating it up. You know what? I don't know if this is the start of something or not. Apparently, the reaction in Boston at the SmackDown tapings on Tuesday was not quite what it was in New Jersey. I don't remember off the top of my head where Raw is this Monday night. That'll be the true test. You know, how do fans react to Fandango? Are they still singing his theme music, or was it just a one-week thing, and all the fans went back home after WrestleMania, and now it's back to normal? I don't know. We're going to find out. I can't predict one way or the other. I just personally don't see this sticking the way, for example, that the Yes Chants did for Daniel Bryan last year. I think that reaction from that crowd and those Yes Chants did more to get Daniel Bryan over, I feel, than this reaction will do for Fandango. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he becomes a big star out of this. All I'm saying is, we were having more fun singing his song. I didn't give a shit about Fandango. It was just fun to sing his song and watch everybody else dancing to it. You've got people in these viral videos now dancing to Fandango's theme music who probably couldn't even tell you what the guy looks like if they saw him in the, you know, if they saw his mugshot. I mean, let's just wait and see what happens here. It's way too early to predict if this is going to be the start of something really big, but I will say this. Going into WrestleMania, I figured if anybody was going to help put Fandango over and make him a star, Chris Jericho was going to be that guy. And as it turned out, who would have thought? It wasn't Chris Jericho, but potentially it was the fans in New Jersey who may have put Fandango on the map in one night. I want to spend just a few quick minutes here on TNA. I did not talk about them at all last week. Obviously, it was all WrestleMania stuff. And I didn't even have a chance to watch Impact last week until Wednesday of this week. And then, of course, I saw the new live Impact on Thursday night. Speaking of TNA, by the way, we did try to start a TNA chant in our section, and that was the one chant that actually died a death. I don't know what that says about TNA, but we tried and we failed. But I did watch Impact on Thursday night. This was almost like a pay-per-view caliber edition of Impact that they were promoting, which apparently did the worst rating in 6 months or something like. It was easily the worst rating all year. that TNA has done. I have absolutely no idea why. I mean, they were promoting this show for weeks. They promoted a championship match with Bully Ray defending the title against Jeff Hardy in a Full Metal Mayhem match, which is just their fancy way of saying it's a TLC match. You know, they were promoting some other tag team title match and just a whole bunch of different things, and apparently the show just didn't do very well. I, for one, was actually not a fan of this show. Normally, Impact, I'm a big fan. It's typically a very good show, a very enjoyable way to spend 2 hours watching wrestling. I was left kind of angry when the show was over, largely because of the Adam Pearce thing. Now, Adam Pearce, for those of you who don't know, is an independent wrestler who has been... He actually was the head booker at one point of Ring of Honor, as well as wrestling for Ring of Honor. Former NWA champion. You know, he's wrestled all over the place. He's a 17-year veteran, not getting any younger, 35 years old. But Adam Pearce is actually very good at what he does, and he's also a very good promo as well. So Adam Pearce appeared on Impact a few weeks ago as one of the participants in Gut Check. Him and Magno, I think his name is, or Magneto, or whatever the hell they call him. He's a luchador, young guy. So it seemed pretty cut and dry to me who was going over in this Gut Check. So on Impact last week, which I went back and watched, Adam Pearce and Magno had a match. Magno was a little rough around the edges. He botched a few moves. Maybe he was nervous. I don't know. Adam Pearce, I think, gave him a low blow. He did what any good heel would do. He cheated, and he got the win. But with these Gut Checks, as we all know, wins and losses don't matter. You know, you're booked to go out there. They tell you who's going to win. And I guess what they're looking for is, you know, your reaction to the crowd, how you carry yourself, and how well, obviously, the match comes off. So forget the fact that Adam Pearce should never have even had to go through Gut Check in the first place. He was much better in this match than Magno was. Magno was fucking up moves left and right. So it seemed like a clear choice to me. So they bring both guys to Impact this week, and the way Gut Check works now is they're in the back with the judges. The judges eliminate one person. That other person has to come back out later on in front of the crowd later on in the broadcast, and the judges render their final decision about whether or not that guy will get a TNA contract or not. So it's almost like two rounds. You make it past round one, you go to round two, no guarantee you're going to win. So Magno and Adam Pearce are in the back, and they eliminate Adam Pearce. Adam Pearce doesn't even get to the point where they vote on whether or not he gets a TNA contract. He doesn't even get to that point. And they show him very solemnly, you know, walking through the hallway, and off he goes. Now, let me just say this. This reeks of a work to me. This reeks of an angle, okay? If in the end, Adam Pearce, and even Ivelisse, remember Ivelisse, okay? We know that Ivelisse was a part of Aces and Eights on a pay-per-view that TNA taped that's not going to air until November. Now, that doesn't mean shit, or maybe it means that she will join Aces and Eights at some point. If this is part of a grander plan, and Ivelisse and Adam Pearce end up as members of Aces and Eights, fine. And in a way, it kind of makes sense. They could say that they were cheated by TNA. They went with people that were less experienced, who didn't deserve a shot. They deserved a shot, and now Aces and Eights gave them a spot. I could actually see that happening. But until that happens, I have the right to sit here and talk about what a fucking stupid decision it was for TNA to cut Adam Pearce, especially if this is not an angle, and if Adam Pearce, in fact, is not going to be in TNA. I was floored by this. Absolutely floored by this decision. This is the decision makers in TNA, apparently. These are the judges in Gut Check. Doesn't speak very highly, I don't think, of the judges in Gut Check. Even when poor Magno went out there to find out whether he was going to get a contract, the people in the crowd certainly weren't dumb. The people in Corpus Christi knew that an injustice had occurred here. They were waiting for the Shield to come running out to right this wrong. And they were chanting, no, no, no. They didn't want to see Magno get a contract. They didn't think he deserved a contract. So I don't even know what to say to this. This was so stupid that I can only imagine. TNA cannot be this dumb. I can only imagine that this is part of a grander plan and Adam Pearce will resurface as a member of Aces and Eights. And even that, I'm not sure is such a great idea, just because Aces and Eights, I mean, how many more members do they need at this point? It's becoming, you know, the NWO B team with Virgil and everybody else they threw in there, Bryan Adams and everybody else. But you know what? As long as he ends up with a role, that's all that matters. But I just could not believe that. They had a segment on this show. Hulk Hogan invited AJ Styles out. He wanted an answer from AJ. Are you with Team TNA? Are you joining Aces and Eights? Kazarian and Daniels came out to be part of the segment as well. So now you've got Kazarian and Daniels out there. You've got AJ Styles out there. James Storm, who keeps interfering in these AJ Styles segments, he comes out. Hulk Hogan is still in the ring. He's kind of in the background. And you've got an entire crowd of fans in Corpus Christi loudly chanting for Hulk Hogan. And Dixie Carter goes on Twitter. She's like, oh, it's so loud in this building. You have no idea. And all I could think is, that's great. That's tremendous. You've got, how many guys are out there? One, two, three. You have four guys out there. Four young guys, four homegrown TNA talents out there. And you've got a broken down old dude who doesn't wrestle anymore, off to the side, not even part of this whole thing at this point. And all the fans can do is chant loudly for the cripple in the corner. Great! What a bright future that young man has ahead of him. Maybe they should throw Hulk Hogan into one or two more storylines while they're at it, since he's already involved in two or three. Why don't they throw him in a few more, since he seems to be the most popular person on the roster right now, even though he can't wrestle a match. That's just tremendous. Main event was Jeff Hardy and Bully Ray for the championship, Full Metal Mayhem. Jeff Hardy took a hell of a beating in this match, so respect to him for that. He took a lot of punishment. He got backdropped onto the steel ramp at one point. He did a swanton bomb onto Bully Ray through the announce desk on the outside. There's a hilarious Vine video that Jeremy Borash recorded from ringside. You can see Mike Tenay's reaction. Mike Tenay is just unintentionally hilarious. His reactions, those very stern faces he makes. Oh, Mike Tenay. The match itself ended when Bully Ray used a hammer, and he hit Jeff Hardy square in the head with the hammer while both were on the ladder. Jeff Hardy fell backwards through a table, and Bully Ray grabbed the championship, retained the title. Now, for this match, Brooke Hogan, who is still married to Bully Ray, mind you, was at ringside, okay? If you recall, Bully Ray gave her a ringside ticket so that she could see the match up close. The way this whole thing was set up, this reeked of Armageddon 1999 all over again. I was convinced that Brooke Hogan was turning heel in this match and was going to align herself and embrace her husband, Bully Ray, the same way that Stephanie did with Triple H back at Armageddon in 99, where Stephanie was at ringside for that match as well. I thought for sure that was the direction they were going in, and I was wrong. So TNA swerved me because I was convinced that that was going to happen. And you know what? Maybe Brooke Hogan still does go heel, although I think that would have been the time to do it. I mean, they set it up so perfectly. I thought maybe she would factor into the finish somehow. I didn't think that Bully Ray would hit Jeff Hardy square in the head with a hammer, which should kill an ordinary person, but apparently Jeff Hardy was he was taken to a hospital, and I take it he'll be okay. But I don't know, this match was kind of, the finish was dumb. You know, another hammer shot, I mean, I don't know. I was not a fan of this Impact show. This show should have been better than it was. They had, you know, Chavo and Hernandez beat Austin Aries and Bobby Roode. It was actually a very good tag team match. I should point that out. That was the opening match on the show. Very, very good tag team title match. Crowd was into it. Roode and Aries are awesome. Chavo and Hernandez aren't, you know, slouches themselves. But really, Chavo and Hernandez again, tag team champions. It just makes me very sad. I was looking forward to Roode and Aries against Kazarian and Daniels for the titles. I mean, I guess they could still do the feud without the belts, but I don't know. Why take the titles off Aries and Roode? I just think that was a mistake. The rest of the show was just, it was all right. You know, you had Taryn Terrell out there looking hot in her little outfit, and she beat Gail Kim. They're doing some stuff with, what's-his-face, Joey Ryan, who's this slimy figure. He got beat up by Rob Terry, who needs to give a piss sample to somebody because this guy, he's like a modern-day incarnation of the Barbarian or the Warlord come to life. My God, see how big this guy is. But this Impact, overall, there's just something missing. You know, there was just something missing from this show. It was not as enjoyable as I thought it would be. I'm going to wrap things up here this week. I apologize, second week in a row of no mailbag. There's just been so much stuff to cover. We will get back to the normal format next week. Keep sending in your questions. TheSolomonster@gmail.com is where you can email me. Please try to include for how long you've been listening to the show for and from what episode number or thereabout, if you know. Follow me on Twitter, at Solomonster. I know we've picked up a lot of new followers, and we're always posting on there. So please follow me on there. Of course, Facebook.com/TheSolomonster. There is a WrestleMania photo album. I posted a whole bunch of videos as well from inside the arena on Monday night. So you can go on Facebook, friend me on there. And you can also go back and check out the vintage sound off I posted up on YouTube, episode 7. My username on there is all one word, The Solomonster. Again, thesolomonster.com, live Twitter feed going on there. You can make a PayPal donation. I am always appreciative to the people who do what they can to help out this show. So thank you all for that. Also, so you know, I will be appearing on the Because Wrestling podcast on scscoops.com this week. I think it goes up on Monday, so if you're interested in checking that out, I will be their guest on the show this week, talking more WrestleMania. So feel free to check that out. Till next time, be well, stay safe. Next weekend will be episode 270 of The Sound Off, and I guess there's really only one way to leave you this week. It's taken the whole world by storm, and it's climbing up the iTunes charts in the UK. God only knows why. See you right back here next week.